A three-judge panel of the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals is considering a challenge to the parsonage exemption. Basically, it allows members of the clergy to exempt the value of their home from income if that home is provided by their employer. Similarly, if the employer provides a housing allowance, that also is not included in the clergy member's income. Adam Chatterow was recently in Chicago arguing in opposition to this provision of the tax code. He is a tax professor and associate dean for academic affairs at ASU Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. Our co-host Mark Brody sat down with him recently and asked him if the parsonage exemption is any different than the mortgage interest deduction that's available to any homeowner.
Oh, it's quite different. So the mortgage deduction, basically, it's a mortgage interest deduction that says that if you borrow money to buy a house, you can deduct the cost. It's available to anybody who buys a house. But the parsonage exemption is only available to ministers, which creates problems under the First Amendment.
So how much money are we talking about here? I mean, this is lost money to the Treasury, right?
Right. So the IRS, or rather the Treasury Department, estimates that over a 10-year window, the government loses around $9.3 billion.
So other than the lost revenue, you are arguing against keeping this provision. What is your problem with it?
The problem is that the First Amendment says that you shall not establish religion. And there are lots of ways to establish a religion. One would be for the state of Arizona, for instance, to say the official church of Arizona is the Episcopal Church. But you can also establish religion by funneling financial support to the church. And the constitutional problem with this provision is that what we're doing is we're essentially taking money and we are giving it to ministers and ministers alone. And that is an unconstitutional establishment.
So if there were other groups of people or everybody, for example, who was able to do this kind of thing, that would be better in your mind.
Right. So there are some wonderful examples of broad neutral categories that include churches. So a 501c3 organization, that's a charity, an educational institution, or a church, all of them can be tax exempt. So if we had a tax provision that said anybody who provides counseling services, whether religious or not, can exclude housing allowances from their income, that would be constitutional.
Now, the lawyers arguing in favor of this provision pointed out that, for example, some members of the military get housing allowances as well and have same kinds of allowances that we're talking about here. Tell me why you think that that is not maybe a fair comparison.
Sure. So what they're trying to argue is that we haven't singled out ministers. Despite the plain language of the statute that says ministers and ministers alone, they say there are other provisions in the code that also provide tax-free housing. The problem with the argument is that these other provisions were enacted at different times for different purposes. They provide different benefits. It's very different from a broad class, all of whom are similarly situated, all of whom get the same benefits. So, for instance, the military are government employees, and so excluding their housing is tantamount to saying we're going to include your housing, but just increase your salary. So exclusion for the military is a form of raise. The great example there is combat pay. Combat pay is not subject to tax.
You and I have talked in the past about how, in many ways, the tax code is set up to incentivize or disincentivize certain behavior. I'm wondering, in this case, it would seem as though this was set up to incentivize faith leaders to live in particular areas. Is that a fair assessment of in this case, what the tax code was trying to incentivize?
I don't think that that was actually their point. It goes back deeper in tax history. So if my employer or your employer provided you a house, we'd have to include it in income. But there's a class of employees who get housing for whom this is not true. So imagine that you're a lighthouse keeper and your boss comes to you and says, we're going to hire you as a lighthouse keeper, but you have to live in the lighthouse because you can't do your job if you don't live in the lighthouse. In that one limited circumstance, we don't include the value of housing in income. So there's a rule, it's called the convenience of the employer test, which says if you have to live on site to do your job, then employer-provided housing isn't income. And the roots of the minister rule are from that, because years ago, ministers lived at the church as caretakers, and so the provision comes out of that earlier provision, but then has morphed over the years into this cash allowance where ministers can live wherever they want, including even in houses they own.
When I hear that, I think of, like, for example, some cities have rules where if you are a city employee, you have to live within the city limits. Or if you're a first responder, a firefighter, police officer in a particular city, you have to live within those city limits. It sounds like that's the same kind of concept, except those employees, I assume, are not also able to exempt their housing from taxes.
That's exactly right. And that's part of the problem here, is that many of the ministers say, well, we need to live in the community in which we minister. We need to live near the church. But that's true for doctors, first responders, and a whole host of other people.
Some clergy members, obviously there's a broad range, but some clergy members don't get paid a lot of money. Is there something to be said for maybe giving them a little bit of a break to incentivize people who might be interested in that kind of work to be able to do it and not maybe have to worry about living in substandard housing because that's really all they can afford?
Again, if we're targeting that only at ministers, no, right? The government shouldn't be in the business of subsidizing religion. And the argument you've just made is, we're poor, we can't do this without help, so please help us by excluding some of our income from tax. And the government could do that for a class of people, but it can't do that for religion alone.
All right. That's Adam Chatterow with the ASU Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. Adam, good to see you again. Thank you.
Thank you.